everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and space, where four wonderful companions board a blue box and discuss all things Doctor Who. I am one of those companions, Dolly Demosky. Joining me as usual is one Marcus Beer.
What it is for shiz, you.
What?
Hello, fellow kids.
Hello, young people of the world. I speak your language.
No, it's the children. Dinner. Oh, God.
Let's face it, I am drunk uncle come to life, even though I'm not drunk.
Yeah, there you go. Sean Norton.
I'm just going to say, hey, I'm a little taken aback by what just happened, so don't mind me.
And Stephen Strom.
Oh, excuse me. I was just on Snapchat sending out some vines to Marcus.
Dude, you should totally hit me up on Bebo.
I bet you guys are huge on tout.
You mean clout or tout or both?
Trout?
Yes. One
is
of those.
Is that a dating site for fish? Trout.
Trout. That's a great idea. That's a Pokemon game for iPhones.
Please tell me how this will affect my Reddit karma. That's very important to me. It's vital.
Well, gents, we are going to discuss The Pyramid at the End of the World today, the seventh episode of the 10th series of Doctor Who. A couple quick notes beforehand. Marcus, you brought up that a certain show was renewed.
I think I read it somewhere. I mean, I may have just been imagining things, but I think Class has been renewed. Maybe I saw somebody starting a petition to get it renewed. I don't know. I got to say, my short-term memory is screwed. Seriously, side effects of being dead. I came back from the other side, and I must have left some bits there. I don't know. I honestly seem to remember seeing it was renewed. So I think it's renewed. If it isn't, I'm sorry. I mean, how many people enjoy Class who listen to our show anyway?
About 4 weeks ago, Class still, Stephen Moffat is saying season two could still happen. So it has not been canceled or anything like that. I know there were rumors at one point, but.
You mentioned a petition. I do see a petition on here on the first page of Google results. So maybe that is what you saw.
Yeah, I'm looking. Hang on. All right. Class season one ratings. Well, apparently they've been, in the crapper.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Apparently it was crap in the UK as well.
Yeah. Maybe it was maybe bringing it to America was kind of a last gasp to see maybe if it will pick up there, maybe we can keep it going forward and stuff like that. I wonder.
Yeah, you'd think they would just do Torchwood.
Yeah.
Perhaps I was wrong.
Speaking of Torchwood, our good friend, John Barrowman. Hi, John. Will not be returning to the Arrowverse. His contract is over and it has been extended. And so he is out of sci-fi TV for the moment. So we'll see where, he's obviously very busy already. He does a lot of stage show and he has the Torchwood audiobooks coming up here soon. He just finished recording, those. So he's still going to be floating around here for the next several months, next year, but, he won't be on our TV screens unless something else happens. We don't know.
Well, I would not discount Chris Chibnall pulling him into the new Who.
Well, I can hope. I can totally hope.
Was that question asked of him?
Yeah. And he said he hasn't spoken to Chris.
He hasn't spoken to. All right. So I'm sure Chris Chibnall listens to this.
Yes. Hey, Chris. So, hi, Chris.
Well, yeah, both him and Moffat
every day
are fans.
Yeah.
So yes, Mr. Chibnall, bring back Torchwood.
There you go. And then last but not least, have you fine young gentlemen tried out the Doctor Who TARDIS flying game on BBC's website?
No. Absolutely not.
It is. It was released about a week and a half ago or so. And it's essentially a motion controlled mobile game. Of course, you can play it with, you can play it with your laptops and PCs, but it plays better with phones. It's just a browser based game where you're flying the TARDIS around and avoiding obstacles. It's very simple. It's inverted axes, so it's the wrong way to fly anything, as we know. So Anyways, so, that is.
Is it any good? Yes or no? How many out of five are you going to give it?
No, it's not good. No, it is a novelty. I don't even think it's really meant to be a game. It's just one of those silly little novelties that.
Is it as bad as those PSN games of a couple of years ago?
Oh, no. No, definitely not that bad. Sorry, Stephen. Stephen, unfortunately, had to review that for us.
I remember that.
Oh, God, that was so horrible.
I don't think I was able to finish that game.
No, you weren't, because it was too buggy, right?
Yeah, there was something like that. I was playing some level as River Song, and it was like literally couldn't progress through like a certain level, so I just gave it a 1 out of 5 and called it good. I called it bad, very bad, in fact.
You know what is fun, though?
Hmm. Like
PlayStation VR.
Yes.
Sure is.
That's right. You just picked up the VR, didn't you?
Yeah, and I got Batman today.
So. Oh, that is phenomenal. The Batman game is great. I would let you know that I want to inform you that Star Trek Bridge Crew just released today for PSVR.
Which
And I bring that up because, as we all know,
because they're paying us.
They're paying us big money. Doctor Who, the Doctor is a big fan of Star Trek. So they've made several references on this season to Star Trek. And it's tied into the universe. They made the crossover comic books, I think, a couple years ago, which weren't very good. But yeah, there you go. So
they've almost gone Joss Whedon level of pop culture name dropping.
Yeah, this season especially.
Yeah. It really, totally. I mean... There's nothing wrong with that. No. I mean, you know, honestly, I think it's hysterical to see that stuff coming out of Capaldi's mouth. And, you know, it was always a fun part of the Capaldi, the Whedonverse with Buffy and Firefly and so on. So yeah, I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see just that little bit of humor just put in, or, you know, just to have him talking about Grand Theft Auto and Mario and shit like that.
Yeah.
And this week, of course, we had the Orange President, which was...
Could you imagine Trump accepting the authority of the Doctor as the president of the world?
Oh my lord!
I liked Bill's like jab at him or whatever in this episode. It's very clear that she's about to say something else. Like, I wouldn't have voted for him. And then she stops. Orange. it was a good. I always kind of found it weird when in the Russell T. Davies era when they would get topical like that with the like very bad fake Obama during the End of Time arc and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That always seemed very strange to me, but like keeping it off screen and not like leaning too hard into it and stuff like that, and like trying to like use weird lookalikes and not show faces and that sort of stuff is super awkward, and they kind of do that a little bit in the previous episode, but just making references to it in more like just prosaic ways is kind of interesting. I thought that worked just fine.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about the episode this week, The Pyramid at the End of the World. Here is your brief synopsis. I'm going to read this straight from Wikipedia because Wikipedia is correct. The Doctor investigates how a pyramid appears out of thin air in I'm going to read that term, Mezistan, overnight, and confronts an ancient enemy ready to destroy humanity. It's the second of the three sort of connected episodes of this monk trilogy, but essentially the Doctor finds out that the monks are here, and they're here to save the Earth, but the only way they can save the Earth is if they're accepted willingly and lovingly by humans to save them, to give them salvation. And of course, the Doctor says that'll never happen. No one, you know, everyone says that's bogus. That'll never happen. They come to find out that a virus has been released or about to be released, and the only way they could do it is if they accept the love or accept the overlordship, I guess, of the monks. Where the Doctor, at the last second, manages to thwart the spread of this virus, but is trapped in the building as he's trying to burn the virus out. The only way he can get out is if he can unlock the door. However, he can't see. He's still blind. And so Bill decides to use her one wish to give up control of the Earth so that she could save the Doctor and let him get out of the building. So
his hubris.
Yes. Anyways, that is the synopsis of Doctor Who, The Pyramid at the End of the World. Gentlemen, let's dive right into it. So this is the Marcus ahead of time mentioned that he hates multi-part episodes. This is the second episode of a multi-part episode.
Yeah, this is a triple header. That's really annoying.
Yeah, this is a triple header. I enjoyed the multi-part episodes last season because it gave a little breathing room to stories and plots. This season, the single hit episodes have been great. And this one is a triple header, the middle of the three episodes, although it is loosely connected to the first one in the idea of the monks. However, it's directly tied in with the cliffhanger at the end to the next one. So what did you guys think? I'm going to ask Steven because we never start with Steven. Steven, what did you think of this week?
So I'll go first, guys. And I think that – no, go ahead.
Let me just hit the mute button. And
I muted myself.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry, Ned. I made you feel bad enough to have to do that. I don't know. I'll basically start by saying like that I don't think this episode struck as much of a like immediately striking note with me as the previous episode did, where it was very good, self-contained. Like, you know, we talk about how this is a three-parter. We've had three-parters on Doctor Who before, not very often, but, you know, and actually the last one I remember was Master-related. I don't remember. Oh, the Turn Left season four stuff was the three-parter too, I guess. But, it's a three-parter, but the first part was basically self-contained, to a certain extent. It was Doctor uncovers a plot, uses the plot. There's a decent twist that actually builds on everything that has come before it, which is something that this season has struggled with occasionally. And he fixes things, or at least, you set up things to be fixed later on and stuff like that. He overcomes the plot that exists in that episode. Mm-hmm. This episode, it's the second parter, it's the second part. Which means it has to be that bridging, like that bridge over the gap between episodes one and three. So we don't get a lot of that, like really satisfying sense of conclusion that I feel like we got out of the previous episode. We don't get a lot of like that, like really satisfying, scary sense of the monks being like the uber threat that they appear to be by the end of the previous episode. That being said, I actually still liked it quite a bit. I thought that they carry forward, for a second part of a three-parter, they carry forward a lot of that momentum in some interesting ways, like especially like the continuation of the monks finding out why they look like weird mummy corpses and them saying like, we chose a form that looked like you, and they said, you look like corpses, and then they said, you look like corpses to us. Like, that's such a subtly threatening thing while also feeling just weirdly alien in a way that I wanted to, because it's like they don't even like they see the future, they don't understand humanity the way that humanity understands itself. They see it as something completely different, so they look like we look like corpses to them, that sort of thing. And then beyond that, I thought like a lot of it just kind of felt very classical in a lot of senses, like this idea of all kinds of different military factions coming together next to the Doctor and stuff like that, and like the Doctor kind of politicking his way across those people. It kind of gave me a little bit of like flashes to the Doctor dealing with UNIT and the Brigadier General and some of that stuff early on, and like, or the early days of Doctor Who and that sort of thing. And like, that worked for me here. I thought they did some interesting stuff with it, like having the soldiers shake hands and say like, well, we'll just save the world right now, how about that? Like, all that worked for me. I think it's just that, like, nothing else really has quite that same level of oomph as the previous episode. It's tougher to pin my finger on it than if it was, like, outright bad or anything, because I think the episode is just fine. It's just, it's the part that isn't the awesome setup, but it's not the part that is the hopefully awesome conclusion. So where do we go from, what expectations should I have had going into this? I'm not entirely sure.
Right.
So, yeah, I'll be here curious to hear what the rest of you think, because I'm not even sure if I've completely formulated my thoughts on it yet.
That's why we usually save you to the end.
I'm a thinker.
Since we actually waited last time, Marcus, what were your thoughts for this episode? Then I'll dive in after you two, because I do have some thoughts that I think might tie into both what you're about to say, Marcus.
I have questions.
Okay.
I have so many questions about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, if Nardole was rebuilt following on from the Husbands of River Song, how come he inhaled the gas and keeled over apparently dead?
Apparently, he still had human lungs.
Yeah,
right?
Doctor said he gave him organic lungs.
Yeah, he said he bought. Like he said, like I'm not human, and the doctor says.
Where did he find him? Has he just been down like the local grocery store and say, "Give me a pound of lungs"?
Well, he said he bought them cheap, is what he said. But also, when they were talking about replacing his eyes in Chasm Forge or whatever, they're talking about how he had like spare sets of eyes back on the TARDIS and stuff like that. So, you know, TARDIS has a lot of weird shit in it. No.
All right. So, next question: how did they fix his eyesight?
How's magic? Space magic. Question.
I think this is another simulation.
Hmm.
I think I'm beginning to think that perhaps some of these episodes have been like more than just last week's episode was a simulation. I mean, it's a bridging episode.
Sure.
Supposed to be the filler, if you will, between the two pieces of bread to give us the sandwich, the L in the BLT, but it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was not gripping.
Yeah.
The other ones have been. It did serve a purpose. It was one that could probably have done without. I mean, see what happens on Saturday night. But just it was inoffensive, and you know, it's like a Big Mac, really. You know, just there. I don't really hate the episode. I don't really love the episode. I mean, some of the stuff it did was. I mean, this whole thing with the bioterrorist, the bioweapon that was made because the guy was, you know, they were showing that how the smallest things can, you know, spark off the end of the world. And it was, you know, the woman's bag getting crushed and the guy having too much to drink the night before and, you know, his vision getting blurry. I mean, if he tied on that much and his vision was still blurry, bitch should have stayed home. For a start, when you mix up 11.8 and put it down as 118, you got some problems. So he totally deserved to die. did anybody else notice the way that guy died was very similar to how the anybody who's touched by the monks dies?
Yes, I noticed that too. Right,
which makes me think again. Perhaps it is a simulation because I've not really seen. You know, it's not quite the. You know, digitizing that was on last week, but it seemed very coincidental that they seemed to die the same way. Maybe the BBC FX budget wouldn't stretch the two.
I thought that the monks turned you into dust, whereas this bacteria basically turned you into like insta goo.
Yeah, it turns you into like oil. Like they were like creating methanol
it just
and
breaks
like,
you down into like.
He sort of like he dustified first. He sort of like crumbled, didn't he?
I thought it was more gooey.
It was kind of a mix, but they were notably different. There was like definitely when the monks killed you, they left behind like a dusty residue, whereas here you were definitely like a puddle on the floor. And you know, Doctor Who has definitely used that similar effect when killing people on shows that, you know, kind of always just seemed to me like kind of a way to get away with having like people be murdered in a weird way that like disintegration happens a lot on Doctor Who. Let me put it that way. Different forms of disintegration.
It was one of the more brutal things we've seen in a while though. I mean, outside of like dust and laser beam deaths, like to watch him go insta goo was pretty intense.
Yeah. They linger on it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of theories about this episode right now, and Marcus, you're touching on the one of it maybe being a simulation again, and these monks are very much love to test humans. It seems like it, right? So they have these strands of information. They could tell the future because they've done everything up until the point. And the doctor even says that. Was it the last episode or the beginning of this episode? I can't quite remember. It was this episode where he says, you know, they've figured everything out about humans, right? Because they've gone through human history. They've seen all the effects of human actions and they can legitimately predict the future and they can sort of predict the unpredictable. And this may be one of the final things because the doctor is the unpredictable one. And they even bring it up in this episode, right? I'm diving in. Sorry, Sean. I'm diving into my aspect, my point right now. But they even bring up that they've been waiting for the doctor, right? That's who they're they've been looking for. They've been expecting him, which they weren't necessarily expecting him in that previous episode. So maybe they learned to throw this, this monkey wrench into things so that they can get the doctor into play here and figure out a way to stop him. So it could very well be another simulation in that respect, right? And then, of course, Bill failed, which means they now know how to get to the doctor in a way. And I think that's kind of their ultimate goal.
Or did she fail? Or did, like, I mean, I feel like the doctor getting blown up would have just made things even worse, ultimately.
Well, I mean,
like,
he can still regenerate. She doesn't know that he can regenerate, but he can regenerate. That's why I think one of the reasons why he's upset with her is because, you know, he knows that he has sort of a future going forward. But at the same point, these monks seem to know a lot or care a lot about the doctor, which there was a TARDIS in the past. There's a theory right now running around that these monks are somehow related to the Time Lords. Or perhaps they are Time Lords. Right. There was a certain Doctor Who character who had a pyramid-shaped TARDIS, and the TARDIS is, since the TARDIS is the most powerful computer on the planet or in the known universe, it can also kind of figure out the past, the present,
run those simulations.
It can run simulations. So could this be? I'm alluding to the Rani having that pyramid TARDIS. Could this pyramid be a TARDIS and the monks be Time Lord related? So this all ties into them getting to the doctor. There was no, with all the stuff about Missy leading up to and through last week's episode, there was zero mention of Missy, essentially zero mention in this week's episode.
Right.
And so I think that aspect starts to get me to believe maybe this is still a simulation because they don't know that the doctor has Missy or has a Time Lord or of his own.
I will say I don't want to spoil too much for you, but preview for the next episode kind of maybe throws a monkey wrench into that theory.
Okay, all right, sure. I do expect Missy to show up here because the doctor did say that she's he's going to need her help, but.
It's funny you say that, though, because, like, immediately when they talked about, like, the pyramid appearing out of nowhere and, like, appearing to be a 5,000-year-old pyramid and all that stuff, like, literally to a T, it almost describes – it describes the TARDIS almost to a T. Like, it appears to be something that it can't be. It appears out of thin air. It's camouflaged as something like that and, all that stuff. And if the Rani had something like that in the past, I totally could see it being related to that in some way. We've seen, a very corpsey looking post regeneration match here before in old Doctor Who, that didn't look too different from the monks. Maybe the monks are lying, but I wonder if it's not a simulation, but if it's, again, this ties into some of the stuff that gets discussed in the, I'm just going off back to my stuff again, though, too. I'll try to keep it shorter. Sorry.
Sure.
Going off of like the preview for next week, it seems like the monks have some kind of mastery over time to some degree. So maybe it's not a simulation. Maybe they've been like goosing the numbers of the world. Maybe they've been like looking at what the world could be and like seeing like, oh, we see the future. We see the past. If we nudge this domino here, it will push this thing into motion that will cause this thing here.
I mean, they probably were the reason that the Evelyn, was that her name? Her glasses were broken.
Erica,
yeah. They knew that if her glasses break, so if they got her buddy into a bender the night before, a roommate into a, or whatever, her lab partner was wasted the night before, so her glasses are broken, he has to misplace the decimal. It's the whole butterfly effect thing, right? The chaos effect, I should say. I actually really enjoyed this episode up until the end with Bill kind of giving up planet Earth to save the doctor, because yeah, she may have befriended him. He may be basically the father figure that she never necessarily had, but or the parental figure that she never had. But at the same time, he's only known her for you know, maybe a couple months at most, 2-3 months. So I wouldn't stop the world necessarily for that kind of thing, but I found her throwing away planet Earth just to be a little bit off. However, that is a very Doctor Whovian twist to an episode. It's a very, I don't want to say a common twist, but we've seen companions do things like that. I think Rose Tyler did that like every other episode. We've seen companions throw away the future to save the Doctor.
Well, don't forget, I mean, we don't always see every adventure that...
Sure, you know, yeah, that's true.
Right, that is very specifically written into this continuity at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is probably totally Cloud Cuckoo Land off-center. I'm still wondering if this whole season has been a simulation that follows on from the end of last season when he was on Gallifrey and he banned, you know, he basically... Maybe. Kicked people off Gallifrey, my planet, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, for his actions, I mean, we've seen things in the past like Trial of a Time Lord. I mean, what happens if he's forcibly caused to regenerate at the end of this particular season after finding out that this entire thing has been made up? Mm-hmm. He's basically in another form of purgatory after getting out of that, the will of a Time Lord thing. That he got out of by punching the glass, if you know what I mean, from last season. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, probably makes total bobbins, but it's just there's something about this season because of everything that's gone through and the messages that have always been that not, you know, the aliens aren't the bad guys. You know, there's various aspects of humanity that are the bad guys,
right? And
this whole 1,000 years looking after the body. I mean. You know, the fact that the vault still looks Gallifreyan to me, mm-hmm. It just makes me wonder if this is some sort of purgatory for him. I don't know. The whole blind thing and then getting his eyesight back, and yeah, just there's something about this season that just doesn't, as enjoyable as it is, it doesn't seem right.
But like intentionally not right on the part of the writers.
I mean, like I said, it's probably. I mean, especially as you know what's coming, you know the Mondasian Cybermen are coming. Mm-hmm. You know that the First Doctor is coming.
I have to say that I want to pass this off to Sean in a second here. Right. But I love the line of the the Doctor sitting there playing the guitar, and then Bill is calling him out. Hey, you got to speak to the UN, and so he opens the door and he looks out of the TARDIS and he's like. How did you get the TARDIS? It doesn't fit through the windows. And then the soldier, someone says, well, it does now.
But I mean,
they blew a hole in the side of the building.
That's another question. Considering in the past we've seen the TARDIS, and in particular on, you know, the Day of the Doctor, where the TARDIS was picked up by a helicopter shaken all over the place. Are you telling me they could have got a TARDIS out of the side of a museum and into a plane? Without him noticing, I mean, he may be blind, but his other sense still working tickety-boo. Was he knocked out?
Who knows?
Maybe he was deep in thought.
Yeah, maybe he was miles away mentally.
He was deep in something. Perhaps he'd taken some magic mushrooms.
Yep. Well, Sean, let's hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. You guys have covered so much, I don't know where to chime in.
Hard not to.
I know. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm on board fully yet with the simulation of the season theory.
Right.
I think there's some interesting plot threads that are hanging out for every episode, including the vault and the Gallifreyans. Marcus, do the meddling monks, what are they related to the Time Lords?
The meddling monk was the master.
It was the master. Okay.
It was the master.
Because I'm really liking this idea.
Monk
that
singular.
It was a monk. My bad. Okay. I'm really liking.
I mean, we're going back a couple of decades here, and I think my long-term memory actually remembers the meddling monk.
Played by British actor Peter Butterworth.
But yeah, he was the master, wasn't he?
Renegade Time Lord who had been a friend until he fled.
I don't know of a Mark IV TARDIS. Yep.
Point is, cooperated alongside the master at the Rani and Drax.
Yeah, I think he was separate. But
all right, so he's somebody different. Okay.
I do wonder, like, I really like this theory that these monks who appeared out of nowhere and, you know, they brought their spaceship down or whatever it is and blended immediately into the environment and have the ability to see all time. I really do like this theory that they might be some sort of Time Lords out of regenerations or twisted off a branch or something like that.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. And the thing that really, really stands out to me, even in spite of all that, is the returning of the eyesight like it was nothing. Like, here we have the Doctor who couldn't even do it himself, and in the simulation actually wanted to borrow from a future version of himself, which could have done who knows what. But then these guys are just like, oh, she consents, enjoy your eyesight, and it's just like nothing. Like, it was – that's huge. Like, these things are essentially – they're essentially all powerful. Like, it's crazy. It really is, and I don't know what they could be.
I mean, it really doesn't make sense, does it? These bad guys do not make any sense.
Well, she said she would consent if they gave him his eyesight back.
And the consent came from her love for the Doctor as her grandfather.
Right.
But still,
their ability to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really significant stuff. And it's actually, I really like the mystery, but I'm really afraid they're going to drop the ball here because these things like... Mm-hmm. We talked about this last week and we were all given props to the fact that they've established this new big bad that we've all wanted. Like, we've wanted something new for so long, right?
And, something interesting, yeah.
Right, and not just a retread or a one-off. And they've so far, they've done that. But now it's actually on a scale that's just massive. Like, the powers that these things have are crazy. And we assume this form because you look like corpses to us. And it's like, oh, okay. So not only can you do everything else, but you could also shapeshift. That's neat. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, what can they not do? You know, like, it's just, it's crazy.
I mean, who can make themselves look like different things and then make themselves appear out of thin air and then make their technology disguise itself is Time Lords. Like, all
yeah.
So much of this fits with Time Lords or some weird fucked up version of Time Lords or some like Time Lord. I could see like the I looked up the Rani's pyramid TARDIS and everything like that just for reference and stuff. And I could totally see this turning out to be the Rani in some capacity, or like, what if these are like the Rani was always like genetically experimenting on people, right? That was like her whole shtick. Like, what if she was trying to make her own artificial Time Lords? Like, what if she experimented on Time Lords and made them into her slaves and stuff like that? What if these are like agents of hers or something? And what if that all ties back to Missy? Because we know this is tying to time control and it's tying to the Master / Missy, and then this has all got to lead into the like. Modassian Cybermen and all that stuff in the upcoming stories and the First Doctor, all that stuff. I can't see this with all this level of technology and all this craziness and all this like stuff going on. I can't see this being anything less than some tie to some big important thing from Doctor Who history. Even if it's like a new play on something old, like even if it's not the Rani, even if it is just like Sean said, like some splinter group of Time Lords that escaped the Time War, but were warped by it, like that one Dalek who escaped from the Time Lock and like burned out his own brain and stuff like that. And you know, what if it's something like that? Like, I can't see it being anything. Just like I can't see Stephen Moffat once again setting up like a new villainous race, like the Silence or like the Weeping Angels, and saying like these are the biggest, baddest, most powerful creatures in the universe until they're not anymore. I just can't see him doing that again. Without tying it to something greater in the universe.
Yeah, I don't know. But the thing is, too, I mean, the Time Lords are still, like, they're back, right? So we don't even have to do the broken time lock stuff anymore.
Who knows
what they've been doing in the background since that whole, you know, what was it, 10 years of build-up and one episode blow-off. But anyway.
We know he busted out of that into Gallifrey, but we don't know where Gallifrey is.
Right.
Right, we don't know where it is.
Don't know if Gallifrey
or what's happening to it.
In, you know, is still kind of in the moment, locked in that particular way. And how did the Doctor get? I mean, we never even got an answer on how he got out of that.
I thought that the Time Lords had said that they had escaped it and moved the Gallifrey to a place that it couldn't be detected, and then eventually they got into that weird Time Lordy tech shit with Clara and whatever, stealing TARDISes
right,
and everything.
All that nonsense, yeah.
But no, I really like this idea because they have to be, right? They have to be. They have so much power. They essentially have to be on at least the level of the Time Lords, right? Which we assume up there was like the most powerful race in all of the universe. So, in terms of the episode,
right.
It's right. In terms of the episode itself, it's weird. I have some mixed feelings on it. I enjoyed the sort of tension it built up throughout. I thought it really hit its stride in the last 15 minutes. I thought it was very, very good Who in those last 10 or 15 minutes again, which has kind of been a theme for some of the episodes this season. What I didn't like as much, and I think I talked about this either last week or 2 weeks ago, when the story is good enough, you can sort of overlook the plot holes, right? Because any sci-fi show, any episode of Who is going to have its plot holes. What I'm starting to feel here is that this three-parter in particular, they're really sort of like, it's a two-part problem. They're rushing to the end, which is amazing to me because I don't know how you space out three episodes and still feel like you're rushing. But it just feels like they do all this build-up and then bam, they got to get to the end. Bam, like suddenly people are figuring out answers. Bam, suddenly like they know what the problem is. And then it's like, it's really cool television, but it still feels rushed. And then the other problem I have with it is that the plot holes are really starting to show and it's getting harder to sort of push them aside. Like the lab alone has to be like the worst created scientific institute in the world. Like, have you ever heard of a place that sterilizes a bacterial infection by humping it into
the atmosphere?
Like, what the fuck? Like, that place had the worst safety. Like it would have been shut down before it ever opened up.
Instead of keypads, they use rotary dials.
Yeah, and then they got the whole like
right. The fucking rotary dial thing is so like
thing, which I like as a device to show the doctor fucked himself up and basically his hubris caught up with him because he was scared. Like there's a cool theme here where he's talking about what you're afraid of and how fear can consume you. And throughout the episode, he can't bring himself to tell Bill and everybody else that his weakness, right? And that's a cool thing. The problem is when you have something like that, but you have these shades on your face that like create essentially, you know, the Matrix style interface or, you know, a phone in your pocket, call somebody and show them the goddamn combo lock so that they can help you get through it. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, we've established that this universe, like that Doctor Who is aware of smartphones with cameras on them that can then like text to each other and stuff. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. And so that kind of stuff bugged me more than it has in previous episodes. And I'm not sure if it's because it's sort of the middle episode of a three-parter and it's sort of like it is so very obviously set up for the next week and part of the bigger whole. But I don't know. It really bugged me. And the human race, like these representatives that were so willing to turn everything over, drove me crazy. And then, of course, Bill, and I know we talk about, who knows, maybe they've traveled together for 2 years off screen and stuff. I get that. But if you go just by the television episodes week after week, it does feel a little bit quick that this very, very smart, very, very independent woman who realizes the stakes of the planet would immediately be like, nope, I got it. I consent. Take over the Earth. Save him. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt... I get why they did it, and I get that they needed to get us to the final episode of this arc and show Bill's love for him and everything. But to me, it just didn't really click like I think potentially some other endings might have. And all of these things together bring down what I originally thought was a pretty great episode to just good. Like I find that it's an okay to good middle episode of what I hope will end very, very well next week. And then we will uplift – like all three of these we will consider as one really awesome story. But man, do they have a lot? Like they have set up a lot, and they have to deliver big time.
Like it. So on that note, and on what Marcus was saying about this whole big, fake season, I guess you could call it. It does feel like there's some big twist coming in all of this. It feels like the monks are here, that they've been planning this for a long time. Have they been planning it for somebody else? Have they been planning it for Missy? Are they aligned with the master somehow so that the doctor, you know, she escapes so that she can, has this been sort of the plan the whole time? Because she was, remember, she lined up with the Daleks when the doctor kind of left her last season, didn't he? Right. And so,
right. She did team up with them briefly. In so much as anybody teams up with the Daleks.
So it still feels like there's some big, twist coming that there's, you know, something's not right. Oh. I mean, it doesn't feel like something's right here with just everything we've been saying with, the rotary dials and the way this lab is set up and this whole notion, the whole season of letting humanity screw themselves over instead of aliens coming in and doing it every time, right? The Doctor has to save humanity from itself every episode. So
they're just so quick to do it. Like what's really bothering me is that they set up this really cool, like, sort of tense Russia, China, US military thing, and then like, no, actually we're gonna work together. No, we're not gonna blow ourselves up. But then it was just like, nope, we're done. This is strategy. We're gonna go in there, even though we just saw somebody else turn to dust by lying to them. But it's cool, we got this because we're gonna let them take over the planet now. And it's just like, guys, come on. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing too,
where the hell was UNIT? Sorry, not to cut you off, Steve, but is UNIT still around? Because I feel like this pyramid of bearing out of middle of nowhere would be like, where's Kate? Is Kate still a thing? Because that I thought that was a little weird.
As far as we know, that like the last time we saw them was with the Zygons, right? And like they were still around.
Yeah.
But no, I was going to say the weird thing to me with Nardole too is like that kind of ties into this idea that I don't know if I'm ready to follow you, Marcus, all the way to like the entire season's a simulation, but I do think there is some greater conspiracy going on around here because like Nardole getting knocked out by the goo gas or whatever, like. Was that the Gugat-like stuff? Was it leaking into the TARDIS? Because there was, like, smoke coming out of the TARDIS console on the things. Like, how in the world would that get into the TARDIS? And then when Nardole falls over, it, like, the TARDIS is making, like, sickly noises, even though the TARDIS goes...
The door was left open. He sent Nardole in, and the air was already in the... bug was already in the air.
Yeah, he came out and went right back inside. No, there's an oxygen bubble, Steve, but I don't think... Yeah, but I don't think it's filtered. This is one of those things I wouldn't. Of all the things that bother me, this wasn't one. Like you can easily just be like, oh, the TARDIS provides oxygen, but it doesn't.
Sure. But something about that just really struck me. Like the way the TARDIS was making noises and all that stuff struck me as like, did somebody else sabotage something here? Oh, but like, okay, I didn't catch the door being left open, so that. Was definitely not like if they showed that the door was TARDIS was left open, then that's enough for me. I buy that then.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think there are definitely things to complain about, but I don't know.
I think he probably inhaled it before he got in the TARDIS because the TARDIS does have a filter system.
Right. I'm saying he was outside, but
bubble. So he brought it in with him and then TARDIS was getting
okay. I'll buy that. Sure. Like that's my like number one rule with Doctor Who. Doctor Who is, you know, it's technically a sci-fi show, but basically it's fantasy because it's just all complete nonsense. And my thing with Doctor Who is if they have one shot, like one camera shot or one line of dialogue that like just hand waves something away, so long as the character or the camera addresses something, I'm happy with it. I'm fine. But the bigger problem is like what Sean you were saying with stuff like. Why does this fucking like high-tech laboratory poison facility pump its toxins into the air after all is said and done? Like, what? Like, that makes no fucking sense.
And then the Doctor just waltzes into this area he knows is super highly crazy, contaminated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that was
nothing. It's like, oh, and then opens the TARDIS and sends Nardole around because he's too human. It's like, great job, dude. Like, hell of a way to contain all this shit. Like... it's just like it's such a solid foundation. Like, there's a really good premise here, but some of the writing just felt rushed and I don't want to say lazy, but it just I don't know. So a lot of it didn't click like it should have, in my opinion. So
sure. And it still feels like there's some big twist. It still feels like something is there, and I'm hoping that we find out.
I don't know. It might be one of those things. Well, this episode 7 of what a 12 episode season plus Christmas.
Yep.
Yep. So we have 8 and then 4 more. Mm-hmm. This might be one of those things we find out, you know, when the Doctor winds up saving everybody next week, we find out what the monks really are, if they're the spinoff of the Time Lords or New Race or whatever. And then they kind of linger in the background and come back into play in a big way in the finale. I mean, who knows? That's been done before, too, in other early seasons.
The silence, Moffat.
Exactly. They introduce them and then, you know, they come back. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know. It should have been better. I think. I think that there was too much convoluted stuff in this one. So.
In my opinion, it's a great setup for the next kind of the finale of this 3-part arc. On its own, it's okay. It's not horrible. It's not amazing. I did like it though. I found myself liking it more than after a second viewing of it. I liked it more than I did the first time. So either way, that's. You know, we're going to have we're going to have differences of opinion. And that's what that makes our wonderful podcast so wonderful. Any more thoughts on the episode?
Just a heads up. The Radio Times has a story that actually hit, I think, this morning, UK time, that actually has some pictures from the next episode.
Yeah, that's been on the web. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's actually one very interesting one in my that for me is has Bill holding a gun.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Where is UNIT? What happened to UNIT?
Yep.
Where'd they go?
I don't know. I just think this was a story that was written probably because they brought him in. Who wrote this? I don't even know who wrote this, but they brought him in
by Stephen Moffat and Peter Harness.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't Harness do Kill the Moon?
Harness did Kill the Moon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lost it.
Well, regardless, I feel like they brought him in and they said, look, this is the arc, make your episode, and they just did it to make it to between 1 and 3. So, and, you know, I think they did okay. Maybe it'll grow on me if I rewatch it. Maybe it'll grow on me as I watch all of them together. Mm-hmm. But as it stands now, as I think about it and talk to you guys, I think it should have been better.
Harness also wrote the Zygon Invasion and Zygon Inversion,
which were actually not bad episodes.
They were not bad. And remember, that had a lot of interesting twists with, who was a Zygon and who wasn't, right?
Wait a minute. Something just hit me.
Was it a dog?
No, it was a realization. So, wait, the plan goes from, hey, you guys, you're gonna wipe yourselves out and you're all going to die, but we'll save you. Just mm-hmm. consent to us being your rulers, which, by the way, is a whole other thing they need to talk about next week.
Yes.
Regardless. Yeah. And then it becomes, because the doctor wound up saving anybody, granted he would have died. So now it's, if you save him, you can rule the whole world. Like.
Right. Yeah.
God, Bill, come on.
That's what I said. I that was, to me, that was the weak part of this episode. I could get past some of the other poorly written aspects. Because I kept thinking there's some twist coming, but that part that the planet's been saved, it's done, it's over with. You can't save an individual, right? Their whole, but then again, they could give them sight, they can make people healthy, blah 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 blah. Yeah. But then it also leads me to, if the monks could do everything, if the monks could save people and wipe out diseases and. Is this still a simulation? Right? The monks have apparently infinite power, right?
We'll see.
How do you have infinite power if you're not in a simulation?
I know. I think that'd be kind of lame, but I'm willing to give them till the end of next week's episode to see.
All right. Well, any final thoughts, or are we ready to give this a good rating? Okay. I think we're ready to rate this. Okay, out of 5,000-year-old pyramids, how many 5,000-year-old pyramids out of 5 do you give this, Steven?
I'm going to give it a 3 pyramids out of 5, I think. Okay, not the 2.5, you know, not completely middle of the road, but just a nudge over it, I guess. Just, you know, it's a bridge. It's got a lot of problems. I didn't hate it by the end. It was fine, but maybe a lot of my issues with it too will be addressed in episode 3, and maybe they mm-hmm. will be addressed, you know, or maybe they'll be made even worse. Maybe the end result of this is like complete slap in the face, and then we can go back and rate the entire 3-parter as a whole and give it a 1, you know, whatever. But for right now, 3.
All right, Sean, what is your rating?
You know, I'm having the same dilemma. I can't decide between a 2.5 and a 3. I think I'll go 3 now with the contingency that I will change it next week, depending on how all this shapes up.
Marcus?
2.75.
2.75. Son of a bitch.
I'm coming in here with your IGN scale.
because I can do different fucking percentages of a scale, and you can't. oh, how do I get between 3 and 2.5?
That's not the question. You know,
what shall I do?
I don't think we've ever 0.75 anything.
It's the first time.
We do a 2.5, we've got to do a 2.75.
You're just making shit up.
I'm going to give...
Those are fake numbers.
Fake news. I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. Because
really?
I liked it a lot more than you guys did because of what I feel like potential. That's cool. I give it potential. Sure, yeah. And I think, depending on how next episode goes, of course, this could drive. It's kind of like when you're reviewing, for those of us that are into the gaming industry, when you're reviewing an episodic game and you're like, oh, great. Should I give Guardians of the Galaxy the first episode a really good score or hold off because a lot of it ties into the next part or the finale? And we've, you know, when you're rating and reviewing things like this, these big arcs, you almost rate them as one contingent, one part, one thing, because individually it's difficult to, I mean, we had fives out of last week's episode, just glowing reviews, best in a long time. And we're kind of let down this week a little bit, but at the same time, I feel like it's a great lead in into what's coming for who the kind of the back half of the season. So I was fine with this episode. I enjoyed it for what it was and what I'm hopeful for what it could be this coming weekend. So I give it a 4 for that.
I'm definitely hopeful. I really hope they knock it out of the park. And
you know, if this is the lowest level of negativity we've had so far, this
that's
season,
a good point.
If it ever gets to that, then this has been a phenomenal season. If we're saying, you know, because you look at this episode, it's better than any of those episodes in season 8 where we first saw Capaldi. Right, it's better than a lot of the episodes of last season, season 9. It's better than a ton of Matt Smith episodes. So we're in, you know, if we're saying, God, you know, they can't all be Porsche. Some of them have to be BMW 3 Series. You know, we're at the BMW 3 Series right now of Doctor Who this season. So anybody who knows cars, I think Marcus, you and I are probably the only ones to get that analogy, but. Anyways, exactly.
No, I think you're 100% right. And I think special props. I don't know if we talked about this enough, but Capaldi, man, well done. Playing this whole blind doctor thing, which is something we've never, ever, ever seen before. Pun not intended.
Yeah.
It's been phenomenal. And we talk every week about him and Bill and Herb Capaldi and whatever, you know, and then how they elevate the episodes, which is still true. But yeah, to your point, I agree 100%. And this is still pretty solid Who. I mean, this season overall, it's just been wonderful.
It's still way, way better than the last two seasons.
Yeah.
Oh, God, sure. Yes.
But, you know, after the last two seasons, a fart in an elevator would be better.
I enjoyed last season quite a bit. But, yeah. Well, gentlemen, it's been a good episode this week, I think, at least from podcast-wise. From a TV show wise, with class kind of winding down, I think we had discussed a couple weeks ago that we'll do an end of season review of class and we all catch up. That'll give us something to chat about when Who goes off the air. I reckon we'll be finding out about who the next Doctor is sometime in July. So it's going to be soon after this season. The series ends this year in June, so...
Do you want to know when I think it's going to be?
When do you think it's going to be?
It's going to be the morning of the last episode of this season.
Yeah,
so they will do like they did with Capaldi and do a big announcement, and they'll have a TV show, and basically they'll do it live in the UK about, you know, just before the episode airs, and we'll get it live here in the US, but we'll have to put up with a bunch of BBC America-related bollocks filled with some nobody twaddle face who doesn't know dick about Doctor Who, but wears funny glasses and unicorn T-shirts and shit, which makes them apparently Doctor Who experts. So that's what'll happen. Not that I'm bitter when they should be hiring us to talk about the next Doctor.
I actually don't think that Capaldi regenerates into a new Doctor at the end of this season. I think that'll happen at the Christmas episode. And I think what we see
just announced
next...
it like they did last time. Do you remember what they did last time? Announced that Peter Capaldi was taking over on a live TV show.
Oh yeah, they did, but it was done in August. It was done before the seasons had started, right? before.
Yeah, but this, I think this time around we will see, because the next time we will see who the new Doctor is, we'll see in the Christmas special. They'll right. announce it. They'll announce it before the season, or like a couple of hours before the season finale.
Hmm. Well, we'll take bets on that. Drinks will be had, and who's correct? You can find us at Lonely TARDIS, lonelytardis.com. Rate and review us. Subscribe. Let all your friends know. Retweet it. I tell you what. Let's do this. If you tweet out to your friends and family to subscribe to the Lonely TARDIS, just grab our link from lonelytardis.com, or just send the link out to lonelytardis.com and use the hashtag Lonely TARDIS. We will choose someone on the next, maybe in 2 episodes time. Once we have enough people, I will choose someone and send a graphic novel, a Doctor Who graphic novel. I have a bunch of duplicates over here, to one lucky person anywhere in the world. So if you make sure you tweet it out, use the hashtag Lonely TARDIS, I will include you in this.
Or share on Facebook with the hashtag.
Share on Facebook. Twitter, Facebook, use Lonely TARDIS. We won't say it. We won't post it on that because we want you guys to post it.
Sean, what other social media do young people use?
What did you say? Bebo, Napster,
InstaChat,
InstaChat, Snapgrams,
Rooted,
Outbook, Shoutcast,
MySpace, do we have a MySpace page? We should do a MySpace page.
MySpace back, yeah. MySpacester, Meet Me, all those.
Chatster.
Yep, Chatster. You can find us individually. I'm at Dolly Domofsky. Steven, where can they find you? At Steven Strom, STVEast.
Oh, not so easy, is it, old man?
And Steven, just to let you know, if you go on your Twitter handle today, I have the mute button ready.
Just so everybody else knows, Steven writes for a bunch of places. He's pretty good at it. Don't let him talk about it.
Just so I can spell my own damn name correctly, it is STEVENSTR.
R-O-M.
O-M. I didn't do it. I didn't actually do it this time.
Sean,
I didn't.
Norton did it. You bastard.
What did you, I didn't do anything. I did the fucking Twitter thing, John.
I think it was a glitch.
It was a simulation.
I think my finger. I don't know what happened.
The monks did it.
Let me tell you, Sean. Your doomsday clock is ticking towards midnight. Let me just warning you now. My finger's on the button.
Sean, where can we find you?
I'm gonna get muted.
What makes you think that?
At Sean Warren, SHAUNORTON.
Oh, nice. It's too lazy.
Suck it, Storm.
Marcus,
Atenoid Gamer.
Yes, definitely. And please hop on our Facebook page. Marcus has been doing a lovely job of keeping everybody up to date with Doctor Who.
I haven't this week. I've been.
Well, there hasn't really been
the past week. I've been kind of shit, so I apologize for that. But
that's quite right.
You
that's
can always right. share some stuff with us, and we'll try and repost totally. It. And I know Stephen. Stephen, you're not going to E3 a year.
Not this year, no.
So Stephen will be stepping up to post a lot of stuff on the Lonely TARDIS Facebook page.
Oh, you bet. I'm just on Facebook all the time.
He is. He's actually about to set up a Google alert, which is something, again, young people do, to make sure all the news is filling his box, as it were, so he can put them up on the Facebook page. And then he's going to tweet out the links afterwards so that, you know, just because he's that good a guy and he's young and he knows technology, unlike the rest of us old farts.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Everything he just said is 100% true.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to us this week. We'll see you on the next episode of The Lonely TARDIS.
Ooh.
Bum, bum, bum.